What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Waka waka waka.
The former informer, Imran Khan.
Waka waka, like, is that a, are you doing the Pac-Man noise or the Fozzie Bear noise?
I was doing Fozzie Bear.
Okay. Cause that,
are you doing Pac-Man?
I think Pac-Man is 3, Fozzie Bear is 2. So that's why I was confused.
Gotcha.
Okay. Glad we cleared that up. We clarified.
You're right, though. You nailed it. No, that's right. I was fucking wrong.
The new face of video games, blessing Adeoye Jr.
Waka Flocka Flame.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I was wondering what Waka reference you might make, and I'm happy
you already know
that one. You gotta do it with no hands, baby. Do it with no hands. This is the Kind of Funny Games cast each and every week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together to talk about video games, all the things that we love about them. You can get the show ad-free with the exclusive post show by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our many Patreon producers did. James Davis at James Davis Makes. Jeffrey P. Long. Julian
beep, beep,
the
beep,
Gluten.
P. Long.
Free Gamer. Sancho West Gaming. James Hastings. Tom Bach. And 248-835-53699. There you go. Give it a call. Say hello. If you don't want to give us any money, that's cool. You can just watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to us as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games Cast. Today, we're brought to you by AT&T 5G and Guideline, but we will talk about that later. Boys, I want to talk about the Smash Brothers update. Who here has played it so far?
I have played the Steve.
Did you get
all
the spirits?
Did you see his giant dong?
His huge center dong in the victory screen? Yes.
It's weird. Why is it like that?
It's weird.
I hope that they change it, because it's like, it's really
unsettling.
Oh, they're
going to change that.
Did you get all the spirits?
I did. They were surprisingly difficult, and I'm not sure if that's because the fights themselves were difficult or that I'm really bad with Steve. And it could be either, because I'm really bad with Steve. It
could be all the above.
The final one, the Ender Dragon or whatever the hell it is, that was a challenging spirit. It was the first spirit that I've had to do multiple times in a very long time.
That one I kind of cheesed a little bit, because like if you get Ridley underneath the cage and just keep doing the down A, he just keeps popping up and popping back down. Mm. The one with the Enderman was like extremely difficult for me, because they would just kick my ass every single time, and I only barely won because I didn't watch that whole Sakurai presentation. I fell asleep during a lot of it, so I didn't understand a lot of the basic mechanics of how this character worked. So I kept running out of iron, and I could not like do the attacks that do the most damage.
So I'm kind of in a similar place where me and Bless watched the live react or the reaction. We made reactions to the reveal of Steve, but because Sakurai didn't do the whole presentation until the MineCon thing a couple days later, I actually never got the chance to sit down and watch it for the first time, playing a new character, not knowing anything about it. On top of that, not knowing anything about Minecraft. I have never been this lost in a Smash Brothers game. I have no idea what the hell's going on. It's seeing the different characters is really like mind-boggling to me, where I'm like, what is the difference between Steve and this Enderman, Slenderman thing, and like all the just different variations going on? All the levels look like garbage now. I'm just like, I know that I sound like a total hater right now, but like this, I don't like this, guys. I don't know, man. I don't want this shit in my Smash Brothers.
Not in my Smash Brothers.
There's a very like old man yells at cloud kind of aspect of this, though. It's like, I am sure that there are kids who are like from ages like 4 to 15, 6, 18, whatever, that are losing their minds at all this stuff. That are saying like, oh my God, they got a skeleton spirit. Or they executed Steve perfectly when he falls asleep
exactly.
in the bed.
And that it's they like, nailed it, right?
Yeah. And for me, I'm like, I don't know. I don't understand anything about this character. This is not working for me.
Yeah, like jokes aside, this is the first new character in Smash Brothers in potentially ever that I'm just like, I don't enjoy this.
Wow.
Like,
see, it's funny, Amy, being way more of a Minecraft fan than a Smash fan, I think, in modern times. Like, everything you're saying makes me interested in it. Like, oh man, that'd be cool to go see. And I'd love to go see how the levels look in the Minecraft way.
Yeah, I mean, this the weird an issue that I have is a lot of the moves, and again, I should do more research and actually watch the how-to thing to understand this character, because like even his B move, I'm like, I don't really understand what's happening.
What's
the bar? He just kind of switches, like, it, I don't know. It looks like he's digging in some, he mines, and like different items seem to be popping up.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know what they do. But okay. Did you know, Imran?
So you have to, basically above your life bar or life percentage, you have a material bar. And you fill that up with materials. And occasionally you'll dig things that will allow you to upgrade your weapons. But the materials determine how, if you can do certain moves. So like, let's say you don't have any iron. You cannot do the anvil move. You cannot do the minecart move. You can't do like certain other things. You don't have enough wood. You can't build blocks out of wood. So that makes it harder to like, you know, use the neutral bee in the air when you're trying to recover. So it's stuff like that. There are a couple of moves that are not like resource dependent, but most of them are. And you will have a very hard time killing anything if you don't have any resources like banked.
I would have not known that. I didn't know that it changed the moves at all. I was using the up A and the anvil like all the time, and it seemed fine.
But it is so incredibly complicated. Like, I feel like this is like when I gave my parents an iPhone and I was like, hey, figure this out. Like, see what you can do with this. That's what it feels like to me, is that I'm sure people who play Minecraft understand all this easily. But for me, I'm looking at like several different things and just not understanding any of it.
Yeah. And it's cool though, because, you know, to the credit of Sakurai and what Smash is, like, there's so much love and care clearly put into it. This just seems to be the first time that it totally goes over my head, and some of that comes off as annoying, because unlike a lot of the other characters, these characters get in the way of the stages. Like, and granted, I was doing the spirit battles, so a lot of them had multiple Minecraft characters at once, sometimes like upwards of 6 or 7 of them, and they're all like creating blocks and shit on the normal levels, and it just turns into just chaos of just pixelated garbage. And it's just like, this sucks.
Yeah.
But I wonder if like I'll ever be able to wrap my head around understanding the core of the character's gameplay without fully understanding Minecraft. Because Minecraft is something that I have watched at least 3 5 to 10 minute explanation videos of what Minecraft is, and I still don't get it.
This Legos. Is gonna be one of those, is Lego blocks.
But that is
well, like, you gotta mine and you gotta craft, and it's like, all right, we can say Legos, but where does the mining and the crafting come in? I'm with you, Tim. I've never understood Minecraft. It's always fascinated me.
If you've played any survival game, you've played like the core of Minecraft at this point. Like, hell, if you've played Fortnite, you've played a lot of like what Minecraft is.
Get your mats, yeah.
Yeah, but on top of that, of just like not really vibing with the character so far, I feel like this is the least interesting like update Smash has had in a long time, where I feel like there's not that many spirits to do. And there wasn't that much other extra stuff added. Whereas, like, I feel like the last couple DLC characters, there was more new gameplay. There was more new things to do.
I think numerically you're wrong there, because there are more Minecraft spirits than there usually are for DLC.
Not for the first ones. I mean, yeah, I guess Min Min was an exception.
Min Min, like, Persona 5 had the most, I think. And then since then, it's been, like, some are one page, some go on to the second page. But, like, Min Min had a decent number, but a lot of them you would have already had, because they were ARMS characters that were in the game already, in terms of spirits. Like, Minecraft has a decent amount. It's just, like, I think they're just done adding a lot of content beyond the fighters. It's just going to be, like, here's a fighter, here's some associated spirits, here's a classic mode, and that's kind of it.
That's it,
like,
yeah.
We're not getting anything else.
Yeah, which, I'll take more characters. I'm still stoked this is happening. And at the end of the day, I'm happy that Steve's in it. I do think that it's super important to represent different eras of gamers. And that is, while it goes over my head, I'm sure there are many people that totally are going to main him.
How much bigger can you get than Steve at this point? Like, I think the route you go down at this point is, I don't know, get Fortnite characters in there. And it's like, all right, well, where are we going to go from here? Right now, I'm in a state of, I'm boycotting Super Smash Brothers because they did my boy dirty. They made a Travis touchdown a Mii costume, yes, and I ain't did. With that. I ain't with that too. Did you buy it?
Yeah, I did.
Have you put it on? Have you tried it?
I haven't tried it yet, but okay. I always just buy the things. Just
I'm curious if it does feel cool to actually like rock that thing and use the swordsman. But aside from that,
look at you thinking about buying it already. You're dirty and you're over here like, wait, is it good though? Should I get it? Did I pick it up?
See, Blessing, what you need to do is you need to put Travis versus Cloud and recreate that fight from the start of No More Heroes 2.
Oh,
with that one guy who looks way too much like Cloud.
Like, oh, identical.
Is he supposed to be like Cloud? Is that the,
yes.
Is that like
that a bit? Joke? Yes.
I didn't put that together. That's actually kind of funny.
Hey. Moving on, I want to talk about a game that we didn't have time to talk about last week, Genshin Impact. Has anyone here besides Imran played it?
I played like a couple hours of it.
What's the word, guys?
Imran probably has way more to say than I do, because I started it and I kind of dropped off, because my journey with it was booting it up the night it came out. It was like a Sunday night or whatever. I booted it up, played a bit, tried to like wrap my mind around it. And basically, I came away from it with the idea that, okay, this is a Breath of the Wild-like game, open world, free-to-play, action RPG, which is really unique. Like, we don't really get many of those, which is the thing that kind of attracted me to wanting to try it out and seeing what it is. As I started playing it, though, like, it felt like it almost felt like a mobile game port in terms of how it runs, in terms of how kind of janky I feel like some of it feels. And then also in terms of the gacha mechanics, because since it's free-to-play, the way they go about monetizing is having these like having these gacha systems and having you essentially buy character packs or character upgrades and all this stuff. That said, like, I think the art style is cool. It is very anime. It is very like here are your waifus. Here's a character that is basically Navi, but it's Navi with a personality and very like, yeah, I didn't really like her that much, but like, and I've not been paying attention enough to Twitter and what the reactions have been to see how people have been reacting to the characters in the game. But coming away from it, I was like, all right, this seems like it's going somewhere. This seems like it has something to it. I don't know if I'm going to come back to it. We'll see. But over the last few weeks, it seems like people have really been digging it.
Yeah, like IGN gave it a 9, which is surprising. Like, I really like the game. I think I put about 20 hours into it. I don't know that I would score it that high, but it is definitely a game that seems like it cribbed from Breath of the Wild and then went, okay, what can we do to improve that? Or what are people complaining about in Breath of the Wild? And the answer was, well, there's no music, so what if we added a lot more music? And a lot of
people were wrong, though. The music in Breath of the Wild is perfect.
Like, people complained about the lack of, or the degrading weapons that you had, like, would eventually break. So they don't break in this game. They complained about the Bowstem a little bit. Then, like, this game is honestly a pretty good Bowstem. It's very Tales of, you know, blank, like. It is litigiously close. Yeah, litigiously close to not Turtles, Borderlands. That would be a cool balance, though. It is litigiously close to Breath of the Wild, though. Like, they're the main enemies, the Hill Turtles or whatever they're called, are straight up just moblins. Like,
yes, they are.
And like, their encampments are moblin like encampments. It, like, there's even a little glider that is exactly like Breath of the Wild glider, except it's wings as opposed to like a whatever the Breath of the Wild thing was. And like, instead of Korok missions, there you get like little things to basically, you like currency to upgrade a statue to get more stamina and stuff like that. In terms of the gacha mechanics, it's not that bad. The only thing you really gacha are weapons and characters, and you get enough of the in-game currency to do it without I put about $5 in this game just because it was free and I figured, what the hell, I'm enjoying it, why not. I have not ever needed to actually pay money for a role. I've gotten like 8 characters at this point, and like 4 of them are free, and then the other 4 have been like also free, but I had to roll for them.
Can you explain that a little bit more? Like, how exactly does the gacha thing work in this game? Because Breath of the Wild with gacha sounds like I'm struggling to put those together.
So you can basically, weapons and characters are random, so you pay they call them wishes, but you can, like, you have the currency of primo gems that you get from like doing things in the game that you can convert to wishes. I forget the exact currency. I think it's like 300 for one or 160 for one, something like that. But you pay that, and then it will roll a random item or character for you, and they have different rates, so characters who are stronger are weighed higher, so they're less likely to show up. I got a couple of 4 stars really early on, and I have not gotten anything since then. So it's been a little bit more repetitive because I had these characters, and I want different elements that they cover. It's like the 2 4-stars I rolled early were a fire element and a earth element. So I got nothing in my party that covers water. I got nothing in my party that covers, of the 7 elements, I forget what the other ones are, but like, I've got no water, for example. So it encourages me to keep rolling for better ones. And I'm fighting that, be like, I'm not going to spend any money in this game, just out of principle. But yeah, that is the part that I think is just, it's fun to have all these different characters because they do control differently. They do have different things. Like, the 2 fire elements I have is, one is a kind of low tier archer who has just fire arrows, and one is a like a character with a spear that like does cool melee combos and like puts out a doll that breathes fire, and they're not at all similar. So I can just choose between them depending on, you know, what the scenario requires. The game doesn't feel as deliberate as Breath of the Wild. And I think that's ultimately its main problem, is that here's a, it's a cool playground, and they took some, like, they made some quality of life improvements for sure to Breath of the Wild, but it doesn't feel like, oh, they meant for this thing to be here. And, like, how should I put this? It feels like they made a map and then filled things into the map. And Breath of the Wild feels like they decided where things should be and then made the map around it. And that's such a, like, it's such a difficult thing to convey that I'm not sure anyone's going to, like, unless you've played both games extensively, it's hard to, like, see what that difference is. But, yeah, it's, I think it's a good game. I think it's worth downloading and playing for a couple hours, like, until you get bored. But I also think, like, I think Digital Trends had a story today that was 5 things Genshin Impact does better than Breath of the Wild. And one of the things I said was, this game has way more story. And it's like, that's not a thing I'd say is better than Breath of the Wild. I think this game has way too much story, and everything takes like 10 text boxes longer than it needs to. And it's things like that of like, maybe you'll find it better. Maybe those are things that you might enjoy more, but they could also be just as like it turn you off as well.
And this is also a mobile game.
It is on, yeah, Android, iOS, PS4, which does not run great, by the way.
No.
And PC.
Interesting.
It's really interesting to see this game kind of coexist at the same time where we're getting Immortals Fenyx Rising in a few months. Because I feel like both these games are trying to be Breath of the Wild in different yet similar ways. Like you mentioned in the article that is, here are 5 things that Genshin Impact does that are better than Breath of the Wild. And I feel like you're going to get that same exact article when Immortals Fenyx Rising comes out, because both these games feel like they are solving for things that Breath of the Wild kind of, I think maybe rubbed certain groups of people the wrong way. Like, yeah, when it does come to the degrading weapons, or when it does come to the story or the lack of story, or however you want to want to call it out, or when it comes to the soundtrack, like Breath of the Wild had certain elements to it that I think some people, me for example, adored. Like I think the weapon degradation works great because the game is designed around that system. I think the music is great because I like the piano music that is there, and I think them using it sparingly was pretty artistically done. But I know so many people that did not like those things. I know so many people that jumped into Breath of the Wild and they're like, why is this open world so empty? Why is there nothing to do? You know, where is the story? Where is the narrative? Where are the side quests? And Immortals Fenyx Rising seems like it's going to have that. Genshin Impact seems like it has a lot of the stuff that, you know, people want from that. I'm curious to see, like, post, I guess, 2020, after we've gotten both these games, which one people seem to gravitate toward more and what, like, the end lesson ends up being with all of it. Because, like, I want to like both Immortals Fenyx Rising and Genshin Impact, because Breath of the Wild, one of my favorite games I've ever played. But I do find that there are things, when I play those games, or when I previewed Immortals Fenyx Rising, when I tried out Genshin Impact, immediately something felt off about both those games, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. I think part of it is, one of the main things I liked about Breath of the Wild, well, two of the main things I liked about Breath of the Wild were, one, the exploration discovery aspect of it. Like, you know, I think that is probably the biggest takeaway from that game, is how well it guides you through the map. You mentioned how the world feels designed around it is hard to put into words, but the world feels very designed deliberately. Like, you know, you're going to the Twin Peaks for a reason. You know, like there are puzzles built around the Twin Peaks in Breath of the Wild. There are when Breath of the Wild first came out, I forget who it was that put out the article about the weenies, but like when you started off in the Great Plateau, right, and you look around the map, right, and you see the floating thing, and you see the desert area, and you see Death Mountain, and you see Ganon's castle, and you see all the different points of interest from that main central area that they start you off from, that is like a thing that is then leading you to experiencing the world in a very deliberate fashion, in a way that I feel like both Genshin Impact and Immortals Fenyx Rising, like, those games might have them there, and I might just, specifically Immortals Fenyx Rising, because I know in that game, there was kind of a Ganon's Castle-esque thing that I remember seeing. But, like, I don't know if they're going to go as hard as Breath of the Wild did with that stuff. And then also, the physics systems in Breath of the Wild is like the other big thing that I absolutely love, right? The idea that you can have it be rain, like you can have a thunderstorm going on, you know, and because of the thunderstorm, that means that if I have a metal sword equipped, I'm in danger. But if I throw that metal sword at an enemy and lightning strikes, that can then kill my enemies, which can then cause the grass to catch on fire from the lightning. And I can use that fire and like glide up it to get like a height advantage to my enemies and then drop down with my, you know, axe or whatever it is, right? Like, those
what
moments,
a fucking game. Let's go.
Yeah, like those moments in Breath of the Wild are so cool. And I still go back to that game and I still experience new moments like that because the game is designed around a physics system that feels so smart and so free in terms of how you use it. And Genshin Impact has like the elemental stuff, which feels like it's trying to go for a bit of that, but doesn't necessarily go all the way in terms of like freedom of using that stuff in puzzle solving and in combat, and like, I mean, just however you want to. Immortals Fenyx Rising, same thing, like it has hints of that, but like doesn't, I don't think Immortals Fenyx Rising is going to go all the way with that either. And so like, I don't know, I'm interested to see like the progression of all these games and like to see like the ways in which they continue to stay the same but also differ, and which one and how different audiences kind of latch on to these different games.
My hope is that by the end of this year, I want to get like, oh yeah, Immortals Fenyx Rising and Genshin Impact did things that absolutely improved in Breath of the Wild. And then next year, Breath of the Wild 2 comes out and be like, oh fuck that, this game is just way better than all of those.
Greg, you were not playing Genshin Impact.
I was
but
not,
you were playing Second Extinction.
Yeah, me and Bless played Second Extinction today, an early access game where you run around in first-person shooter mode shooting dinosaurs for 1 to 3 players. So it was me, Bless, and Andy today. Did a stream that was sponsored, but not sponsored by Second Extinction. It was sponsored by NXT, right? WWE
NZXT.
Nope. No, NXT, the wrestlers.
The amazing computer brand. They're awesome.
My apologies. I kept making Triple H references. Nobody understood. So we ran around and played this PC game today, and I had little to no expectations for it. I think we had seen it, what, at the one of the Xbox showcases, right, Bless, where we had commentated over it.
Yeah, I'm just going to call it the Assassin's Creed Valhalla Xbox showcase.
Fair enough.
That's the thing that they're showing there.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one that was announced there. It's in early access now on Steam, and we jumped in and played it. And I had a hell of a time with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's this weird early access PC game that was given me and Blessing, and I think maybe even Andy, all kinds of fucking trouble starting and keeping it in the right resolution and doing stuff, which, of course, I chalk up to PC gaming in general. But the game itself was a ton of fun, right, Bless?
Yeah, no, I had a blast with it. Like, I'm not necessarily one to fall in love with the Left 4 Dead-like games, but this one specifically, I think the actual act of controlling and playing it, like the first-person shooting, is really solid and really fun. And the way in which the raptors break apart when I shoot them shoot them in the face with my shotgun, very satisfying.
Yeah, and that was what I wasn't expecting. I think, you know, I was going to say we as an industry, but definitely me, Greg Miller, I'm so quick to say, oh, it's trying to be Left 4 Dead. Oh, it's doing this and trying to do what Left 4 Dead did. And to step into this game and not know what we're getting, hadn't played it until we turned it on today, and find that, oh man, it is literally just jump in and, like, you know, pick which character you want to be. They have different, you know, special abilities or whatever, but you get to go through and pick what weapons they have and go from there. To run in there and just have it be us three running around trying to pull off the objective to then, you know, get to the end and exfiltrate out. Like, it was fun. You know, it was challenging at times. They have a bunch of big dinosaurs in there that are a threat. I don't know what you call that one with the, you know, Tim, you're a big dinosaur fan. Mm-hmm. The big dude who you kind of think of it like having a giant turtle shell, and he's got that big tail that he spins around
the
with.
Spinalococcus.
That's the one.
Yeah.
He was there, and yeah, he is, you know, his belly was the only weak spot. So, you know, we had to blow at him, and then he would start tipping over and try to throw a grenade to roll him on his side and then shoot him in the belly. And it ran well, and it was fun to play. And, you know, it is Left 4 Dead to run around and shoot a bunch of stuff, and then Andy screaming and we have to run over there and help him. But I had a lot of fun with it.
I think it has like a lot of hints of greatness too. Like, I think it being in early access for where it's at right now, I think it's in a good place. Like, playing Hades has made me such a believer in early access, because I've been watching the no clip doc about the making of Hades. I think it's called Developing Hell, where they track Hades from its
fantastic
early access launch.
Name.
Great God. Name.
Daniel Dwyer. clever son of a bitch.
They basically tracked Hades from it launching in early access and what that looked like. And yeah, like coming back to Hades and playing it as a fully released game, you know, everybody's in love with it. Everybody's like, this is fantastic. Everybody's talking about how good it is. But, you know, watching that early access journey, I think reveals a lot of things in terms of, okay, cool. Like they started with a lot of these ideas in place, but it's cool to see them add in certain weapons or see them struggle with how a certain boss fight played out or see them struggle with, oh, there are these glitches here that are messing up the whole thing. Like, you know, playing Second Extinction and seeing that me, Andy, and Greg all had our different character builds. Because there are different characters you can choose from that had different abilities. But we had our different characters, had our different weapons. But then, like, there are certain support items that you can get that would get airdrops. And so, like, at a certain point, I was like, okay, well, if Andy has the one that calls down equipment, which will give him grenades and stuff, and then Greg has the one that'll call down ammo, which will give us more gun ammo, I guess I can just get the one that is the airstrike, which will then cause, like, a massive damage effect on the enemies. And then, like, that turned out to be really great build, because then when we did come up against the Tim, what was the dinosaur called again?
The Rhinosalakabu.
Yeah, that guy.
One, all right, that's the
whenever we'd come face to face with him, I would use my airstrike ability, and that would knock him out. And that was way better than the first time around, where we were all just struggling with him for like 10 minutes at a time because he just wouldn't go down. We'd have to flip him over. The airstrike took him out in one hit. And so to see stuff like that, I think is really fun, and I think it signifies like a good starting place for this game.
And that's the thing, is it's a starting place, right? Where we did two missions. I thought both of them were meaty, right? What that stream was like an hour and a half probably, right? And there was, yeah, you know,
it seemed like the missions were like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and I wasn't bored with them. I wasn't anxious for them to be done. I was anxious for them to be done when it was time to be anxious, right? Of like, we've completed all the objectives, get to the exfiltration point, okay, call in the chopper or the, you know, helijet or whatever the hell it is. And then, of course, you know, it's a standoff for like a minute 10 or whatever, and more people are coming, more and more enemies are coming. But there was that thing that, you know, we always joke around about when you watch the Ubisoft E3 presentations and you get that, all right, they're on your six. All right, I'm dropping this over here. There was that happening, right? Of like, all right, I'm going to call it in. Everybody drop your, you know, the resupplies so that we know where everything is when it happens.
I find the idea of calling it an airstrike and a dinosaur hilarious. And I'm just like...
Well, that was the thing. Busting, we were underground. We had to move these mine carts, right? Like into position and blow it up to take out this like thing they had taken. The dinosaurs had, you know, their little breeding ground in. And we're in there in the tunnels, and Blessing's like, man, I'd love to call him my airstrike right now, but I doubt it would work. And I'm like, dude, this is a game about dinosaurs. Do it. It's going to work. And sure, in the tunnel, an airstrike comes down somehow or whatever. And it's like, who gives
it? Hilarious. That's
great, man. What killed the dinosaurs, Greg?
The Ice Age.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Tell me about Foregone.
Foregone, a game I talked about on PS I Love You this week that I am super impressed with. It's not a game that should speak to me. Kevin, I'm going to kick you a trailer just because I think it's easier to see or whatever. There you it's a 2D action platformer that isn't a roguelike, but has like that feeling to it of progression and coming back to it. But it was in Kind of Funny Game Showcase from back in summer when we did the E3 one in 2019. We've seen it make the rounds here a lot. I think it was in the Nintendo presentation when they announced their Switch release date or whatever. But out on consoles now, another game that was out in early access. And what speaks to me about it is that I think glancing at it and watching it right now and seeing it, it wouldn't be what I would define as my kind of game. Like I look at it and the 2D platformer, you know, double jump kind of thing usually doesn't speak to me that loudly. But playing it, it's simple enough to get into, and even when I lose, be like, all right, hold on, I know I can do this. Like, you know, for me, usually it's coming up against a boss in one of these kind of games that'll be the turn off of, motherfucker, I got to memorize this pattern. How do I do that? And what do I do next? And yada, yada, yada. For this one being the simplicity of having a melee weapon, having a ranged weapon, having a dodge / slide you can use, and then having two different abilities assigned to your shoulder buttons playing on PlayStation 4. It was easy to get into and wrap your head around. And then there's this loot grind to it of getting new items off of the enemies you beat, then going back to, you know, HQ and having a blacksmith. You can have him upgrade your weapons or upgrade your armor, having this, you know, skill tree that you're going through. And as you go through the levels, which have a bit of Metroidvania to them, of you going through and, you know, only opening up on the map or showing on the map screen what you found or where you've been before. You'll find things, little upgrade modules that when you take back, you can apply to make your skills better. So like, you know, I use this dash slash or whatever, so making that more powerful and making my melee attacks tether an enemy to the ground, and that tether start to deal damage, and as I upgrade it, deal more and more damage. The roguelike part of it is that when you go through these worlds and you die, you go back to your home base, and there you can talk to a guy who'll give you back half of what you've earned from the currencies that'll either be applied to the blacksmith or the, you know, sage person that's giving you your upgrades. And then you can go back in there, and the doors you've opened already are going to be opened already. So it is this thing of, again, even when I do fuck up and die, I feel like I've made some progression. Even when I screw up and I come back to it, I feel like I'm moving forward. Yeah, sorry.
That's more Souls-like than roguelike.
Yeah, I guess it is in that way, right? Yeah, because I think that was the thing. Everybody was trying to hang so much Dead Cells on it.
It looks a lot like Dead Cells.
Clearly an inspiration there. But yeah, it plays differently in the way that, yeah, you're making the progress and keep going. Kevin, why are you still obsessed with these Buffalo Blasts from Cheesecake Factory that you can get on DoorDash using the code MORNING?
I hate him so much, but I love
him. Is it Metroidvania-ish?
It is in the way, like I was talking earlier about how the map's presented. I haven't run into a thing of like, how do I do this? I don't have the skill kind of thing, or I don't have the item for it. That may exist. I'm still early in the game. It was one of those things where I had a great night or two, maybe the weekend is when I did it. I forget when we got code, but I played it and I was like, oh my gosh, it was that thing of like, I'll play this for a little bit and then switch over and do my dailies in Avengers. And instead it was like, oh no, I'm going to play this all the way through that night and keep going and going and jumping into it that way. But I'm impressed with it. It's a little indie game. Seems to be doing pretty well. And I think it's interesting in that with the way I've described it. Like, obviously I think it's, and I know like indie, what does indie fucking mean anymore? But it means like in the way of playing it, like the presentation and the way, like even like little guns and your gunchucks, you can get nunchucks that are guns, are represented on the screen and
fantastic
stuff. Like, yeah, exactly. It's very like basic in that way, but I think there's a gameplay hook to it, and I think it's an enjoyable play.
Bless, before we move on to talking about the Xbox Series X, you got 120 stars.
I did.
Mario 64. I think 93 the last time I popped it in.
It's wild how, like, I, without even realizing it, I just fell into it. I mentioned on PSLV XOXO, because we have a what we've been playing segment on that show, and like I think at a certain point I mentioned that, oh yeah, ever since I beat Persona 5 Royal, I've not really been married to a game. I've been playing just all these different games, but I've not necessarily been like, you know, on one. And it was yesterday as I was completing it where I was like, or maybe it was 2 days ago at this point, but it was as I was completing Mario 64, or like completing isn't getting the 120th star, where I was like, oh, I guess I have been married to this game. Like, I've been playing this game nonstop. It's been such a reminder that it's one of those things where when I think of the N64 era and I think of N64 games, I think we all have the shared understanding that none of those games have aged well. Like, it's hard to go back X, Y, or A, B, I guess, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what I was going through, X, Y, Z, A, B, C, but et cetera, et cetera. But man, and maybe this is just the fanboy in me, but I feel like Mario 64 has aged so well. Like, I feel like the game plays so well. I feel like the level design is so good. The more and more I played the game, the more and more I was like, wow, there are geniuses that made this thing. Like, actual geniuses that made this game. I feel very satisfied with my 120-star journey. And I actually wanted to use this as a jumping-off point, because as I was getting my 120 stars, I started to have the thought about how big of a Mario fan that I am across all the games. And I started to have the thought of, man, I wonder if, like, we polled people, who people would say is the biggest Mario fan at Kind of Funny. To which I made the leap that I assume people would probably say that Tim Geddes is the biggest Mario fan at Kind of Funny. Which made me think
that as well.
Which made me think, I wonder if I can challenge that.
Huh?
Which made me think, man, Extra Life is coming up soon, isn't it?
I love
which
that.
Which made me sit down and think, how can if me and Tim wanted to sit down and do some sort of challenge, some sort of competition to see who's the biggest Mario fan at Kind of Funny, what would that look like? So Tim, I have a proposition for you, and I can let you work out the details, whether this happens at Extra Life, whether this happens separately, whatever this looks like for you, because you're the plan guy. You know how to plan things out in a way that works.
Okay.
But I got an idea, right?
We're in Dunktober still. Are we trying to get to Mari? I don't know. You're gonna have to help me out.
That could be November. It's Mario's 35th anniversary. Right? Okay, this is a year long thing. Five rounds, five challenges. I've written two down. All right. The first challenge I want to do, me and you. Let me find it because I've written it down, but it's in one of my sticky notes, and I gotta pull it up. Hold on. I gotta cycle through these things. Okay, here we go. All right. I want to see who can be. This is essentially going to be like a race format between me and you. Okay. All right. The first challenge: who can be the first to beat the first Bowser in Mario 64?
I like that. All
right. Me versus you. That's challenge number one. Challenge number two: who can get the most coins in Mario 3 in under 10 minutes? All right.
The most coins. Interesting. Okay.
Switch things up. Yeah.
That's a bizarre challenge, but I'm in. Yeah.
But those are the two that I've thought of. What I want you to do. Think of your own two challenges.
I mean, I think a basic one we need is beating Mario 1.
Like beating? Oh, yeah, because
I guess the entire game.
Bless, it's a trick. Ooh. Don't do it. Bless is a trick. He knows how to do it faster than you. I can tell you right now.
But I can train. I got time.
Yeah, it's not rocket science.
I got time. All right.
Bless, don't do it. It's a trick.
I'm just putting this out there now. Like, I love that you're calling me out, and I am in. But we got our boy Imran here too, and I'm just saying he's probably a big fan as well.
Yeah.
Would you make
this a three-way? What a re-endorsement of himself from Imran.
I'm thinking like your challenges so far are very for five challenges. It's very early Mario centric. There's not a whole lot in the last 20 years.
Well, that's the way I was kind of thinking about it, right? Because I know my bread and butter when it comes to my two favorite Mario games, there are Mario 3 and Mario 64. And so I figure if I'm going to make two challenges, I'm going to make those two. Can I have Tim make his own two challenges? I'm sure Tim loves Mario Galaxy or who knows, Mario Odyssey.
You know, Mario Paint, you guys have to recreate the Mona Lisa and whoever's the most accurate.
Yo, I will fuck you up in that attack, though. You ain't ready for that. But
yeah, that's true. I'm not going to fight you in that attack.
Hey, I love this is fantastic, but... come up on the spot with some other challenges here.
To solidify, right? My idea was, all right, I'll come up with two. Tim comes up with two. And we'll have a third party come up with the fifth challenge. You get a Dan Riker. Somebody else we know who loves Mario.
We can bring Dan into this.
Mario 64, who gets the better time on Koopa the Quick and Bob-omb Battlefield?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's the race up.
I feel like if you guys do a trivia, I want to write the actual trivia questions for that one.
See, I like that. Ooh. I want a trivia challenge for sure.
Yeah, because I will fuck you guys up with that one with like the most dumb bullshit possible.
I love it. I like this. What type of trivia would it be? Like about the directors and stuff of the games, or would it be about specific levels?
Like, I mean, stuff like which Mario game had the most polygons in Mario's mustache?
Odyssey, right?
You'd think so. No, it's a Mario Party.
Fuck.
Oh shit!
You're not a Mario fan.
that's what's interesting about this is the who's the bigger fan, who's better at the games, and who's the bigger fan. I think are different questions.
Okay,
and I don't know how good you are. And look, I'm not good at video games. I would never claim that I'm like super good at video games. But there are certain things that I'm like I'm pretty good at. And beating Mario 1 fairly quickly, not faster than anyone in the world, but just is something I'm pretty good at.
Because, like, here's the thing. My two challenges are based off the fact that I think I'm very good at Mario 64, and I think I'm also very good at Mario 3. And so, like, those are two that I'm very confident in when it comes to, like, just the movement mechanics. Mario 1 is a very interesting one because I think I'm very average in Mario 1. Like, yeah. I know the path to get it. I think I know the path to getting to the final level quickly, right? Because it's the warp path. It's the warp pipe in World 2. Mm-hmm. And I assume you take that to, like, World 4-1?
Bless, he's playing you, dude. Like, he's world record fast, almost.
No, I'm not.
I have heard Tim brag that he can beat Mario 1 in around 6 minutes.
No, I did not say that. No way.
Now he's trying to get out of it. Now he's trying to get out of it.
I am fine with training. I can train in Mario 1.
The best I've ever done is under 10. And that was only once.
Yeah, 9 minutes, right?
See, the thing that fucks me up is that is 8-1 through 8-4. Mm-hmm. I will die a lot.
They don't fuck around.
Yeah, they don't fuck around in World 4.
The key to beating Mario 1 fast is to not lose your firepower. If you lose your, if you fuck up somewhere in 8-1 to 8-4 where you get small, it makes 8-4 infinitely harder. Because you have to get not just through Bowser at the end throwing all the hammers, but there's a hammer brother right before the thing with the lava going up, and that'll mess up your day.
Yeah.
Because if you're big, you can just jump, run through, take the hit. It doesn't matter. Cheese it.
Cheese it.
See, how long? This is me making an admission. I don't like 8-4 has like kind of the maze sequence, right? Where you are trying to figure out which is the right path, which is the right pipe, et cetera, et cetera. I do not know which is which. Like, that would take me a minute to figure out.
Greg, I feel like, nerds. To be fair, what we should do is like, it's one challenge per generation.
Fair. See, but he wants a Mario 3 challenge, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We need to cut that Mario 3 challenge out if you want to keep the Mario 1 challenge.
Damn.
Because, like, there are so many Mario games along the way here that I think one per generation is the only way we can do it for 5.
We can make that work, but like, no, we'll figure it out this way, right? Mario 64, if we did like a rank the top 5 Mario games, like all those games are in there, right? Like Mario 64, Mario 3, Mario 1, I guess World would be in there,
yeah,
and then probably like Odyssey or Galaxy or something. And I feel like that's a good range,
yeah.
I would
think Mario 1, World, 64,
3, and then a modern one.
Yeah, I would assume Odyssey just because it's easier at this point.
Yeah, we can do like a Koopa race in Odyssey.
Oh, no, now you're setting Tim up. I've seen your videos. You are setting Tim up.
Yeah, no, he'll destroy me in Mario Odyssey with that stuff. I'm bitching this. It's just 3, 2, 1, go. Whoever beats Mario 1, Mario 2, Mario 3, and Mario 64 up to the first Bowser.
Oh, you will get me in Mario, at least Mario 1 and 2. Mario 3, I start to fuck up in that last world.
Well, if you guys have suggestions, see, now let us know.
I'm getting excited because it's like, I think we could do this if you connect your OBS to be your camera. Virtual camera. Yeah, and then you have the gameplay. That could work. We could make this work.
Like, I was just showing that to Andy. That actually works pretty easily.
I love it. But let us know your suggestions. Go to the Reddit. I think that'll be a good place. If you can make a Reddit thread, just put all your suggestions and we'll go from there.
We're here, I want to challenge an Extra Life Fran to a Patapon competition. Who can get as far as this Patapon 1 without one death?
Is that like a thing that...
No.
Imagine being like, what's Patapon?
But now, a word from our sponsors. This episode of Gamescast is brought to you by AT&T 5G and Samsung. Thanks to Samsung and AT&T for sponsoring this podcast. Samsung's newest phone, the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra 5G, powered by AT&T 5G, is available now. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and coverage, not in all areas. Here are just some of the new features you can try out on this device. Cloud gaming will be available with the power of 5G. You can try out cloud gaming with high performance experiences brought to you via the newest Samsung devices powered by AT&T 5G. The Galaxy Note 20 Ultra 5G also has 120Hz adaptive display that automatically adjusts the refresh rate according to the content you're viewing. That's super awesome. You gotta love that convenience. An intelligent battery that optimizes for your gameplay. Between 5G support, Wi-Fi optimization, and the advanced processor, you get a smooth gaming experience with virtually no lag. You can head over to AT&T.com/GalaxyNote20Ultra 5G to learn how you can get the Samsung Galaxy Note 20 5G for free, or the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra 5G for just $299 for a limited time. Again, check that out at AT&T.com/GalaxyNote20Ultra 5G. Next, shout out to Guideline. Offering a 401k sends a great message to your employees. It says you have their back when it comes to choosing a 401k provider for them. Which one will have yours? Guideline provides easy and affordable 401k plans for small businesses and startups. Whether you're offering an employee retirement plan for the first time or want to make changes to your current retirement benefits, they design a plan to fit your needs. You can get set up in as little as 10 minutes. Guideline handles the admin, compliance testing, record keeping, and investment management. There are no separate setup costs, no added investment fees, and monthly fees start at only $39 plus $8 for each employee, and they integrate with popular payroll providers. Over 13,000 companies use Guideline to manage their 401k. You could join them. For a limited time, if you go to guideline.com/kindoffunny and tell them you came from Kind of Funny Podcast, you can get a $100 gift card when you start your 401k plan with Guideline. That's guideline.com/kindoffunny to get a 401k for your business. Don't forget, guideline.com/kindoffunny. And tell them the Kind of Funny Gamescast sent you. And now, the topic of the show, ladies and gentlemen, Xbox Series X. Greg, Imran, blessing me. We've all been able to play it. We've gotten our hands on it. We've got to play around with a whole bunch of stuff. And now, our lips are unsealed. We're allowed to say essentially anything we want with our experience. No more just being able to talk about quick resume or just being able to talk about this, that, or whatever. Imran, what are your thoughts?
So I've mostly been testing like backwards compatibility because there are like very few like Series X games available for us to play.
Yeah.
So the backwards compatibility on that thing is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, keep in mind, I am not a Digital Foundry. I don't have like frame rate testing equipment. I tested two games to see, like on a PS4 Pro and a Series X just because like I had those games available. Like, I tried Kingdom Hearts 3 on both. It is a night and day difference how much better it runs on the Series X than how it ran on the PS4 Pro. Like, Tim, when you played Kingdom Hearts 3, did you play it on like the locked 30 FPS mode or like the inconsistent frame rate mode?
Inconsistent.
So like, you know, that inconsistent frame rate,
it was inconsistent.
It rarely hit 60, often went down quite a bit. Yeah. It is, I'm not going to say locked 60 because honestly that's hard for me to perceive, but it is more 60 way more often than not. The resolution is higher. The image quality is like, mwah, chef kiss. Like, if you didn't have a last gen system, a Series X in terms of backwards compatibility is incredible. Like, it is the way to play these games, I think.
Bless. What's your experience?
I agree with what Imran just said as somebody who's been playing a lot of Mirror's Edge on the Xbox Series X. It's wild how, like, playing Mirror's Edge, the load times, I kid you not, might be like 1 second. Mm. Like, it is wild how quickly these games load. It is, and I mean, honestly, like, that's really the only thing I can really talk about because, like, you know, I'm jumping into Xbox Series X as somebody who has been playing a base Xbox. I guess this year I've been playing an Xbox One X, but I've been playing it on my 1080p TV. I've been playing the Xbox Series X on an actual 4K television and experiencing it that way. And so I'm finally experiencing 4K pretty much on the Xbox for the first time currently. And so, like, you know, Mirror's Edge, you know, looks good. It still is a Xbox 360/PS3 game, and it is like backwards compatible. It's not optimized for Series X or anything like that. And so it's not like the most fantastic looking thing in the world. But yeah, like the load times and playing it and realizing that, like, getting to the sequences in that game where you're going into an elevator and like you're waiting for the next thing to load. Like, I've been having the thought of, man, if only they knew, if only they didn't put these elevators in here, because now at this point we're just wasting time. Because if they put a loading screen here, I'd be on to the next thing already. Like, it is wild to see. But yeah, like the quick resume feature, like people have read the previews, but you know, to reiterate, like that stuff really is kind of game changing. Like being able to switch back and forth through a bunch of different games is a really cool thing and really convenient. I've also been playing Outer Worlds, the Pearl on Gorgon DLC, and also I should shout out that like the loading in that game is much quicker too. And also that game runs way better on Xbox Series X than it did on my base Xbox One when I first played it. Like, in terms of not only how good it looks and like the frames and stuff, but like when I originally played Outer Worlds on Xbox One, there were just a lot of like drop frames, a lot of stutters, a lot of stuff that just didn't sit well with me playing that game on Xbox One. And it is smooth. Like, it is incredible how well that game runs, and to the point where now I feel like I am playing Outer Worlds as a first person shooter as opposed to just an RPG. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been such a good experience. And yeah, like, I do kind of see it as this this come together moment for like the Xbox family of systems, right? Like, I know Xbox One has been backwards compatible, but to see everything kind of brought up to Xbox Series X in this way, and to see the library there and be able to jump back and forth through the different generations, it's really cool to see, and it has me actually really excited for what Xbox has coming this next generation.
I tried out Cuphead and Ori and the Will of the Wisps, where Ori we reviewed earlier this year, and a big issue I had was how frequent the loading was and how much loading times there were. So now playing it, I know that they've patched the hell out of the game, and I know there has been just a lot of enhancements and changes over the last year, but it is just now instant, where like there is no loading. Like, I'm playing it, and I'm like, I don't know how it's been on the Xbox One X, but I don't think it could possibly be this damn fast. Then loading up Cuphead, it's another thing where Cuphead never had horrible loading times on the Xbox, but they were noticeable. They were there. They're not anymore. And then doing the quick resume jumping between the two games, it's like, I'm so impressed at how much it just works. And I feel like that's just going to be the catchphrase of this for a long time. Of, it just works. If something should be fast and snappy, it is. The menu, just the UI itself, just going through the different tabs and stuff, I don't know how it could possibly feel as fast as it does, because I never had an issue with the Xbox One's interface. But something about this just feels snappier. And that word's going to keep coming up a lot. Like, it's just snappy. And I really love how it all just kind of, things feel like they were where they should be. And I enjoy the level of customization that you have. And I know you also had that on the One X to an extent. But how they're having everything laid out of being able to get to things and how quick it all is to go from thing to thing, I'm like, this is just a more enjoyable experience. Yeah. And the focus on Game Pass and just being able to go in, and this might be something like Imran was saying, like, I'm not Digital Foundry. I'm not doing the actual like technical experiments and tests to see like how it's actually running in the numbers. I'm just talking about the feeling of it. Sure. Even just downloading games feels faster. Like, we recently, Greg, had to do Master Chief Collection on downloading like the updates and stuff for when we did the stream on the Xbox One X, right? And like, mm-hmm. that took forever. And yeah. then downloading games from the for Game Pass on this, it felt so fast to me. I downloaded a whole bunch of them. And I was just like, this is insanely impressive. And it just seemed like it wasn't getting in the way of while I was playing a game, slowing things down. Like, it's just fast, man.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have a lot of Xbox games because, like, just years of being in game journalism, I get codes and put them in. And there's always a bunch of stuff on my tile bar. It used to take forever on the Xbox One and the Xbox One X to load those in. And sometimes it would be, like, literal minutes for things to populate completely.
Wow. Sure.
This is instant. Mm-hmm. Like, minute, like, less than a minute. It's, like, a couple of seconds is, all right, here's everything you own. It's, like, that was the thing that... I know you said you never had a problem with the Xbox One OS, Tim. It's always felt very sluggish and slow to me. It's never felt right. This one, it feels like, it doesn't feel like a layer over a Windows thing anymore. It feels like an actual OS for the system. And it's just, I was so impressed by, like, granted, this is like day minus whatever. So at some point, bloat could hit it and it could get a lot worse. But on as of right now, it functions like a dream.
Yeah, speaking of the bloat real quick, like,
it's worth pointing out, of course, that we're using non-final interface. Yes. These are preview units. I don't think any of this is going to change, but it is when we're talking about bloat could come one day or do whatever. It is important to say that.
Right.
Yeah. And speaking of the bloat, like, I do not like how many ad feely things are stuck on the front main page of it. It's just like, come on, guys, like, let us take that out. And I get that why they wouldn't, but it's like, it's just pretty frustrating.
Yeah, and to like the because I 100% agree with everything Imran just said about like the Xbox One versus how it is functioning now on the Xbox Series X. Like, everything just feels snappy and smooth and straightforward in a way that I really appreciate. But that also coupled with like this feels like a very arbitrary thing, or like very much like a thing that people who play Xbox probably already experience. But the fact that I loaded up The Outer Worlds on the Xbox Series X with my account and it already remembered my save. Like, I didn't really have to think about it. It just automatically pulled it in a way. And maybe this is just because I'm also coming off of playing on PlayStation primarily, where I believe I would have to download.
Yeah, you have to go to your own cloud saves and get that stuff and bring it down. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like Xbox prioritizes whatever is the most recent online save that you have, or I guess this most recent save period that you have on your system or online. That it makes things so convenient and so snappy and just so easy to use that, you know, it's really convenient.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Kevin, what's next generation all about?
Convenience.
Thank you. And I mean, you know, I know you guys are the new impressions here for the Xbox Series X. I had it first before we passed it around. That's my biggest takeaway from it, right? Where, as we talked about, I guess we've just talked about it. I think I mentioned on Games Daily today, but like, you know, if Watch Dogs Legion's codes come through soon, and they're like, oh yeah, we have, you know, Xbox Series X or whatever, like, I'm gonna jump on that, you know, and trophies be damned, because the experience I had with the Xbox Series X is exactly what you're all saying. It's just the fact that it works and it does what it's supposed to do. And it works as advertised. You know, I've talked about this a few times on different stuff and other people's shows, but like the quick resume thing, I've seen people be like, oh yeah, but like, well, who cares? Like, I don't play that many different games, so I don't do this. And it's like, it's not even about on one night jumping between games. It's about playing one game for the night you do it, bouncing out, the next night playing something else for an entire week, coming back and resuming right where you left off with the other one. For me, it was about switching it over for some capture stuff I wanted to do for Yakuza. And, you know, I brought the HDMI out of the TV and put it into the AVR and put the AVR into the computer. And then for some reason, I didn't have audio, so I did a reset of the Xbox. And when it came back and, you know, it loaded it, I mean, just, you know, a complete power cycle came back on. I was right there, started Yakuza and picked up right where I left off. Like, it remembered my spot through quick resume through the power cycle. Like, mm-hmm. That's nuts. Like, I was sitting down ready for, okay, hold on, I'm gonna have to do all this other stuff and get back in to load my save. When no, it just remembered that. And it's to the point that by no means is it ruined other games or anything, but it's that idea of even like, you know, Borderlands, there's new DLC for Borderlands. I'm like, oh man, yeah, I want to go play that. And then Borderlands like, oh yeah, next gen's day and date, you know, with the new consoles. And I'm like, I will not. I will totally wait and play that experience there because the Borderlands loads suck. What are those going to be? And when you start applying that logic, like you're all doing with backwards compatibility, like I showed last week with Avengers and Fortnite, it's like, yeah, like Imran, you had a tweet, I think even before you had the Series X, that is so true of like, when are we going to check Twitter now? Like, you know, I was playing Avengers last night, loading stuff up, and I'm looking at Twitter while I'm on the Quinjet going to the next mission. And when I was playing on Xbox Series X, I wasn't doing that. You're in that experience all the time. It's making the most of the limited free game time we all have.
And like, I was playing Monster Hunter, which is like infamous for long load times, and to the point where like literally I got so used to checking Twitter before hunts that I would do it in front of the developers when demoing the game. Like, when I played this on the Xbox One X, and it just, like, usually you would have time to take the mission, then go do some stuff, like put on some new armor, eat a meal, whatever. It's like, take the mission, beat, mission's ready, go. Then you go in there and it's like, beat, done. Like, that is a game that literally would take minutes to get to where you need to be, that now is instant. And like, I am like hyping this part up because I am so surprised by it that I thought it would be fast. I didn't know it would be this fast. And it's going to make, like, there's a number of games I just haven't finished or haven't even really started for the generation. I'm now holding off on them for the rest of the next month until I start getting these systems in and play them there.
And dude, I keep saying this about both the PS5 and Xbox Series X, but now having experienced it, it's like, this is making games better. The games we currently have are going to play better there. And so many people are like, oh, but why should I buy a PS5 right now? Like, Miles Morales is also on PS4. It's like, playing the Xbox Series X now and playing the backwards compatible games or even current gen games, it's like, that's the answer. It's like, it plays better here. Like, these SSDs and all the technology is working in synergy to create the optimal experience for you playing games. And on top of that, even just the peripherals that we got to play with the system as well, like the controller and the memory card, like I know the memory card is like very expensive and all that stuff, but it needs to be. And to an extent, I'm happy that it is, without cutting corners, the right SSD that it needs to be able to work with the system correctly. And I love how clean it looks just popping into the back of the Xbox, and then how seamless now you just have more memory space. And it's funny because, like, you know, back in the days of the PlayStation 2 memory card, GameCube memory card, all that stuff, that was just like, okay, I'm putting this in to be able to save my games. This is different, where it's like you're doubling the storage space of your system and the ability to just have games stored on it, pop it in, and then they're just ready to go installed is so cool to me. And like, that just adds to the convenience of all of this. And the controller's dope. I'm a very big fan of it so far.
So speaking of the controller, I've got in my hands the Series X controller, and the day one, you can see it right there, day one 2013 Xbox One controller.
God, rub it in our face again, Imran, that you have the day one Xbox One controller.
I like the Series X controller a lot more. It's a little heavier in the grips. It has like the mesh pattern on the back that makes it like easier to grip. The capture button is nice. The buttons all feel nice. Like the overall build quality feels a little bit better, even if it's not dramatically different. I I really say, like, as far as standard controllers go, it's not a big leap, but I'm really liking this a lot more than my, like, creative or, like, Xbox Lab controller that I built a while ago.
Like, and so with that, I do think that the D-pad has always been one of my biggest issues with Xbox controllers. And while this one's not perfect, I do think that it's the best compared to the standard Xbox One controller. Comparing it to the Xbox Elite controller, the Series 2 that I have, it has the same kind of feel, like the same grippy stuff like that originated on the Elite, which is really nice. And I'm happy that that made the transition because it makes it feel a lot more premium. But the Elite, obviously, is still the best way to go. Like, there's just something very premium about the whole thing. And the weight is even, it's even heavier, but like in a good way compared to that. Like, using that after using the Elite for a year at this point, it's like, it feels like a cheap toy. And it's funny though, because like, comparing it to the other controller, it actually feels fairly premium, the original Xbox One controller. But overall, I'm stoked that it is as good as it is.
Yeah, that D-pad was I've seen that thing before. Like, I've never had hands-on with it, but like, I've seen it in, it looked like a Mosaic censored controller, like in images. But when you actually do it, it's like, oh, this is actually a really, it's nice, it's clicky, and it actually hits the directions it's supposed to hit.
Well, the biggest thing is it's replaceable. You could take it off, and there's like, there's different types of D-pads. No, I'm talking about the Elite controller.
Okay, I was about to pry this shit open. Okay.
Yeah, no. The Elite controller, you can pop off the D-pad and replace it with different types of D-pads depending on what type of game you're playing.
Gotcha.
Which is a very nice feature. So I'm not going to be switching over to this new controller over the Elite, if anyone was wondering.
Yeah, but I like, if you've only been using the Xbox One controllers, this is a step up from that.
And having said that, the Elite fucking works with the Series X.
Yeah.
Because it's totally backwards compatible with the peripherals as well, which is just great. If it should work, it should work. Come on, guys.
Convenience.
Exactly, baby. You guys, have you played any of the actual next-gen versions of games on the Series X?
I've gotten a little bit of hit because so Yakuza was built in on the preview Series X we got. So I've gotten a chance to go through that demo. Greg and I, we put up a video for first impressions for his playthrough of that. Since I saw that, and since I'm going to play this game in a month anyway, I decided, like, I'm just going to run through this, and I'm just going to, like, skip all the cutscenes and go straight to karaoke and go play that. And that game, like, it is not a next-gen looking game. I will just be up front there. If you're looking for what can next-gen do, Yakuza Like a Dragon is not that game. But it loads fast, and the image quality is really good. And it's, like, a noticeable improvement from, like, I was just watching my girlfriend play Yakuza 0 a couple of weeks ago on my Xbox One X. It looks better than that in terms of resolution, image quality, load times especially, because there's like, the Dragon Engine already doesn't do a whole lot of load times, but there's like nothing in this one. They're just going straight from thing to thing to thing. I really dig the way that game looks and the way it plays, but it is a next-gen port of a last-gen game, so it's not a whole lot to go off of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same thing. Obviously, I did the first impressions with him, Ron, and that was before we passed the Xbox over to him. Yeah, I really enjoyed my time with it. You know what I mean? I've taken a lot of time off of Yakuza. But I guess this isn't about Yakuza itself. In terms of the Xbox, what he says is spot on, right? I think I say it in the preview that it looks like Yakuza. It's a sharper, clearer Yakuza, but it's still got that jagged frame of what Yakuza games look like and stuff. But again, back to the quick resume and how that works on it, back to how fast everything loads, like, it does feel like it moves at a different speed. And it'll be interesting for me and all of us, I guess, when we get the new consoles, how long before that becomes normal, before we kind of forget that how loads used to be and how long things used to be, or if, you know, as they get deeper and deeper in, if there becomes more loads or something of that effect. But that's my next gen experience with it, yeah, in terms of like something that was, you know, a next gen launch game.
Yeah. Something that I'm really interested in seeing next gen consoles of how they kind of affect people's habits and knowledge of what they're kind of doing is this is, I think, like the closest we've ever been to consoles being PC gaming, where there is so many different settings and you need to have the optimal setup to get a lot of the buzzwords that they're even talking about. Like the old adage of, oh, any HDMI cable works. It doesn't matter. Why are you spending $150 on a monster cable when you could spend $3 on any HDMI cable? It's like, that's not true anymore. Like, you need very specific HDMI cables to be able to get the high refresh rates and all of the crazy resolution bumps and the stuff that they're really kind of talking about a lot with this. And on top of that, it's like the settings get pretty complicated going into, like, I was just tooling around with it. And luckily I care about the stuff a lot. So it's like, I know the difference between all the different sound settings and video stuff, but there is way more on the Series X than there was even on the One X, which already had a lot of things like Dolby Atmos, which by the way is still awesome in this on the Series X. I love that they're pushing it so much, but I could not recommend paying the $15 enough to get Dolby Atmos for headphones or for surround sound, whatever, on the Xbox. I'm so happy that that's a feature that they have.
We'll see how you feel when PlayStation updates their sound so I can have TV speakers with 3D surround sound.
I mean, that's the thing. It's the same. Dolby does that too. On the Xbox, they do have that functionality.
I know, but I just remember how much you hated that.
Oh, yeah. That stuff.
You're supposed to get angry. And they're like, it's not going to work. No.
That stuff is stupid and it's not going to work well. But the headphone stuff does work and it works very well. Yeah. So it's cool. And I love that they're doubling down. And I saw Jeff Keighley post the video of Blinks, the Time Sweeper, an Xbox original game, and it's playing in 4K with Dolby Atmos and all that stuff. I'm like, that's just rad, man. It's just God, so cool.
What a time to be alive. Like, the idea that if you told yourself in 2003 or whatever, right, that like, hey, you're gonna play this exact same game, but the experience in about, let's say, 17 years is gonna be different. Like, it's just gonna be greater. You'd be like, oh, all right, cool. Like, let's see what Dolby Atmos, the thing that I don't know what it is. You know, let's see how that changes things.
But
like,
see,
I loaded up Banjo-Kazooie and I'm like, this looks weirdly good for
same.
What I'm doing.
I did the exact same thing.
That's awesome, right? It's like, that's the thing, is like, it's not just backwards compatible. Like, PS2 was backwards compatible with PS1 games, but they didn't look better. You know, like, there was a lot of bugs and a lot of issues and a lot of weird things with that. And it's like, sometimes it would be better because of the component, like the cables being used. But besides that, it's like the experience of all these games, it's like, this is the best way to play the Xbox games is on the Series X. Like, that's so rad to me that is true, not just for the games that are enhanced. It's triple true for those games, but it's just every game gets enhancements. And I'm very excited to see that they're sticking with that.
It's them nailing an ecosystem like we've talked about, right? Like, it is Xbox is talking the talk and walking the walk, and this is how they view their brand, and it's going to be rad.
I cannot wait to see like Xbox Series X optimized games. Like, that's kind of the thing that's missing from the equation, is we've not really experienced Xbox Series X optimized games. Like, we played Yakuza, and I know like people have their hands on, like, actually I don't know if I can say certain things, but like, you know, Yakuza is like the example, and I've also played it, and I'm not, there wasn't anything I got out of playing that made me go, oh snap, all right, here we go, it's here. Like, nothing in that game made me do that. Though, like, playing that demo was pretty cool because it got me excited for Yakuza in a way that I've not really been excited for Yakuza. Like, the voice acting, I think, the English voice acting is great, and like, is really, it's really communicated, like, the humor and the goofiness in that game in a way that I've not necessarily gotten to really take in before, because I've only like jumped into Yakuza Zero in those games. I'm not really immerse myself in them, and so experiencing that through English voice acting, I think, is really cool. But then also the battle system in that game seems really cool in the way that they've updated it. But yeah, like, you know, that is a game that is also coming out on current gen, and I imagine will probably be very much the same on current gen, aside from maybe like a few things here and there, faster loading and all that stuff. But yeah, like, I've been, so my roommate Michael is like doing a lot of work over at GameSpot covering Xbox Series X, and like, occasionally he'll come through and be like, oh yeah, man, like, I've been capturing, you know, whatever, so I can have this video up. And he talks about, like, you know, the 120 gigahertz, right? And like, how playing on Xbox Series X, you know, is basically an equivalent to playing on like a really good PC. Like, I'm getting that experience. And that kind of goes back to what you were mentioning earlier, is him, that like, yeah, like, we're entering that space that, like, yeah, we're playing Call of Duty or playing whatever game it may be on the Xbox Series X, you're getting the prime experience. And like, I'm sure it'll be the same on PS5 also, but like, to make it clear, like, it is an incredible experience playing these games on the current, on I guess the next gen. And when we actually get those optimized experiences, that's going to be something else.
And that's my biggest thing too, is like, yeah, there is not any really super exciting thing gameplay wise that I got to experience so far with this. Like, having it was like, oh shit, I got my hands on the Series X, set it up, did some, you know, little demos of popping into those games and stuff. And then I was just like, all right, cool. I can give it to Imran now. Like, yeah. It's not like there was anything that I need to do. However, it's Greg, I think you mentioned this earlier. It's just like, they've proven all the marketing stuff has been true.
Yep.
It's exactly. like they proved that it is as fast. It does just work and all that stuff. And it's like, that is so exciting to me. Even if there wasn't any like single thing that I was like, I have to do this right now. Right. And I think that that's kind of the promise of next gen. And I think that, you know, it's, when you're looking specifically at the Xbox and its launch lineup and what's going on with the Series X right now, it's, I don't think that it's bad necessarily for it. I'm not comparing it to Sony. I'm saying just bad for Xbox that they don't have their Halo or whatever, because they do have Watch Dogs and Cyberpunk and Assassin's Creed and all these third-party games that are going to run amazingly on this console. Like, that is exciting. And I truly believe, based on my experience with it, that they are going to work great.
Dirt 5 was the game I was thinking of earlier, where I was like, I don't know if I can say Dirt 5, but I just looked up the GameSpot thing and they have the video. So
you can say Dirt 5.
Okay, yeah.
They're allowed to say the words Dirt 5.
But yeah, like folks, like, you know, Dirt 5 and Yakuza Like a Dragon are like the two games that are like Xbox Series X games that we've gotten our hands on. And I can't wait to see more.
Gears 5, which I didn't get to play. No,
Gears Tactics?
Gears 5. Gears 5
came out. Oh, there's like a next-gen version?
The Series X next-gen version.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to test that, but I was like, that. I don't remember that game having load time, so it was probably not going to be a useful test. But yeah,
I think that's more on the frames per second side of stuff. But Jeff Grubb actually did a super awesome video of Dirt 5 and showing the differences between the performance mode and whatever the fuck they're calling it, I don't know, but the different modes that they have, and showing how it stays essentially a consistent 120 frames per second when you have it all set up right. Like, that's insane, man. That's like on a console.
Speaking of Jeffy Grubb, he's been having this thing on Twitter of yelling at people who are concerned trolling about Heat on the Xbox Series X. So like, I want to just say this thing, I don't know if it's hot to touch or whatever, but playing it, it does not get my room hot. It does not exude a lot of heat. It's not the space heater that the Xbox One and the PS4 Pro are. So people who are overly concerned about that, don't worry. The Xbox Series X is not a hot, it's not a
heater.
Portable heater, yeah.
I don't know, man. Look, I'm not saying it's a portable heater. I'm just saying it is as hot as my Xbox One X, which
I'm sure if you touch it, it is quite hot, but it's not making the room around it hot.
Go ahead and say it, Tim. Go ahead. Be a man.
I haven't had enough experience to be able to say that, because my Xbox One X doesn't heat up my area unless I'm playing hours of Resident Evil 2 on it. You know what I mean? Like, to get to the point where I don't notice it, at least, right?
Okay.
Or like my PS4, like, unless I'm playing Last of Us 2 or whatever, and like, really, I've only been popping into little demos here and there of these games, so I can't say. Having said that, though, I bet you it's as hot as the One X, which is fine, totally fine. I don't think this thing's gonna like cook eggs.
Yeah, but it depends on load. It depends on how games like evolve over the generation. At some point, they might actually be like too much, and that thing does get much hotter. But
yeah.
Based on, like, granted, backwards compatible games I've been playing so far, does not seem like a huge, like a noticeable deal now. It's not significantly cooler or anything, but it is, I did not notice it to be a problem.
And another thing I just want to say, and this is just the pessimist in me, is this is all great now that we're talking about 120 frames per second and all this stuff. Like, enjoy it while it lasts. Yes. This is not going to last forever. This is because we're crossing over gens and all this stuff. The moment that we're getting, like, Last of Us 3 and, you know, like whatever we ended up getting from like Hellblade 2 and stuff.
I don't think
we're getting like this type of stuff. Like, and I do think 30 frames per second is going nowhere. Like, it will return whether it or not.
That's the reason I get a little trepidatious about, like, I mentioned earlier, like the 120 gigahertz and like the PC experience on the console. You know, part of me was like, okay, 7 years down the line, is it still going to be the same thing, or will PCs have evolved to a point where like,
of course they will.
And all that good stuff. Which,
also, Bless, I love that you keep saying gigahertz. It's just hertz.
Is it just hertz?
It's just hertz. It's just hertz. But I love gigahertz.
Then how many hertz are 120 gigahertz? That's a lot of hertz.
1.21 gigahertz.
Oh, man. That's a lot of hertz.
It is a lot of hertz.
A lot of hertz.
Any closing thoughts, you guys, on the Xbox Series X?
I'm excited. I can't wait to see get more games for it, get the launch lineup out there, see what it is when it, you know, we get rolling with both these systems and like start to see the games drop for them.
Yeah.
I think that's ultimately where I'm kind of like, they've said the hardware, they've shown the hardware works. They've proved that part. Now it's just, okay, so where's the next part of the games? And that's still going to be a bit of an open question for a while. But I think by this time next year, assuming Microsoft does like actually put out what they said they're going to put out, people are not going to remember, oh, launch did not have a whole lot of games to it. They're going to remember, hey, this thing loads really fast. It seems to have really good graphics, so cool.
Yeah. Last thing I want to say is this thing looks very ugly in my setup. The results may vary, but man, I hate that. Like, this system's not made to be on its side.
It's a trap. No,
that was my
stands
thing.
In it. It's horrible, man.
When Xbox had the great dunk on PlayStation when the video went up, breaking it down and showing it how with the screw and how to put it all together again. And everybody in Xbox, like, here's how you put it down. They put it and they shot it from a very specific angle. I was like, it looks fine there. In my entertainment system, and it's at Imran's house now, but when we would turn around and I would look down at it, it would be like, there's the bait. There's the stand. Yes. The stand is on the side. It's not detachable. So it's like, it looks like it fell over and I put it there.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer. I can't wait to see what the like revision versions of these consoles end up looking like.
Same. It looks it got tired and just like laid down. That is what the Xbox 3 is.
I sleep here.
Both the PS5 and the Xbox Series X at this point, like aesthetically, I don't think I like either. Especially if the PS5 is as big as it seems. Like if the PS5 was a decent size, you know, then I'd be cool with it. But it just now the more and more I see it, the more and more I'm like, oh no, this thing might be comically huge. If that's the case, we got like a weird situation going on with both these things, because I don't want either of them in my entertainment center.
I'm having to rearrange, like I have a glass TV stand. I'm having to rearrange it so nothing's on the top shelf. Everything's at the bottom because I'm scared that like the size of these systems is going to collapse that glass shelf.
Oh, the world that we have to live in, ladies and gentlemen. This has been the Kinda Funny Games Cast. Stay tuned, Patreon supporters, for the exclusive post show. We're blessed. Are we returning with a game show?
We are returning. Bless who returns.
Woo! Oh, baby. Let's go.
And if you've never seen one before, I'm really good at it, and I win all the time.
It's true. He does.